And we're back. Oh, God, I hated this movie. I hate starting the episode like that, but this is Mike, and Oscar. We've avoided this one for a while. I personally was offended when I saw it was nominated because it meant I had to watch it. But here we are doing another Oscar Sprint profile. Have you ever heard us do a 15-minute OSP before? You may today.
We're going to try.
But I'm your co-host, Mike One. This is also Mike.
Also Mike here. There's one of these every year now in the Best Actor category. This is Vincent J. Israel Van Gogh Esquire. Yeah. And that joke didn't work. Neither did this movie. And
yeah, but at least Roman J. Israel, like, we're doing At Eternity's Gate today. Willem Dafoe nominated for Best Actor. It's the movie's only lone Oscar nomination. If you can't tell, we're not thrilled to be doing it. But at least Roman J. Israel was entertaining. Like, yes, the plot had some vicious holes, but
Denzel also had a costume that was pretty epic.
Yeah.
In terms of all Denzel costumes, and he's had some great ones. Mike, is this the artsiest, extra most fartsiest film of the year or the decade for you?
This is the Academy at its worst. Like, this is the old school 1990s famous actor who hasn't won anything.
Playing the famous biopic
in a small budget film that nobody has seen. So let's give him a nomination.
Yeah, if before the credits, just in big letters, F-I-N, Finn, showed up, right. Would you have thrown up?
Yes. Yes, I was actually expecting it to. But let's, I guess we'll get into it. If you haven't joined us for an OSP before, boy, did you pick a fun one. It's every Oscar Sprint profile is when we take would-be, should-be, and in this case, are, will-be Oscar contenders, put them through our OSP format. What that means is you get two reviews for the price of one. The first half of every OSP is a non-spoiler section. We go through the performances, the production values, the specs of the movie, the cast and crew, etc. We don't spoil anything. Second half of every OSP episode, is a full-fledged, spoiler-filled breakdown. We go through the twists and turns of the movies, talk about everything. So if you haven't seen the movie yet, and you haven't seen this movie yet, I promise you. Don't worry, you won't get it spoiled in the first half. You'll have a big, long musical interlude in the middle to tell you that the spoilers are upcoming for a spoiler warning. Spoiler-filled is at the second half, but let's get into it. Willem Dafoe did get an Oscar nomination, his second one in 2 years now, for playing Vincent Van Gogh in At Eternity's Gate. Mike is going to start with the cast and crew.
Yes, I'll start with Dafoe. Last year in The Florida Project, he was also nominated, like you said. 2001's Shadow of the Vampire and 1987's Platoon make up his other two Oscar nominations. He's been in a lot of great stuff, and he's had a couple really strong years.
Sure.
Aquaman.
Fantastic talent.
Big box office. He was the narrator in Vox Lux from this year. Last year, Murder on the Orient Express. A couple years ago, Finding Dory, John Wick. Another year ago, before that, 2014, The Fault in Our Stars and The Grand Budapest Hotel. Some of my other favorite Dafoe performances include a voice in The Fantastic Mr. Fox. He was an inside man, The Aviator for Scorsese. More Wes Anderson in Life Aquatic with Steve Zissou. He was very funny in that.
Yeah, quite the resume.
Finding Nemo. He did both of those movies. Three Sam Raimi Spider-Man films.
Spider-Man. Does everything a spider can.
He's a detective in American Psycho, Existenz for Cronenberg, Affliction for Schrader, The English Patient, Basquiat for Schnabel, and we have Wild at Heart for David Lynch, Mississippi Burning, Last Temptation of Christ for, of course, Scorsese.
Worked
again.
Worked with big directors all throughout his career, had big parts. He's a legitimate movie star.
Born on the 4th of July for Oliver Stone.
To live and die
in L.A. He's also been in three Lars von Trier films, Nymphomaniac,
Jesus.
Mandalay, and Antichrist.
And I would watch any of those over watching this again, yes.
He was born in the year of our Lord. No.
His social security number is...
Three Golden Globes, one BAFTA. He has never won an Oscar, Michael. We just did a big list on the people that never won before, the best living actors never to win.
Yeah,
he was the top
that. This is kind of the example that we talked about how... if we go back and listen to our lead actress category review, how, like, you could juxtapose it. Sam Elliott for the supporting actor is quite well. Mm-hmm. The Lifetime Achievement Award should be used as a tiebreaker. It should not be used as a narrative to reward someone.
Or a nominator?
Or a nomination, sure. Because this is what you get. You get performances in movies like these that... objectively are just tough to watch. And I can't wait to talk about the audience score, because this is not for the casual viewer.
Yes, we're getting there. At Eternity's Gate was directed by Julian Schnabel, previously nominated for Oscars for The Diving Bell and The Butterfly. I think that was 07?
Yep.
Schnabel's also directed Morale, Berlin, which is a documentary, Before Night Falls, and Basquiat. Oscar-winning screenwriter Jean-Claude Carrière.
He's been around.
From The Unbearable Lightness of Being, Mike Wan's favorite movie, and the remake of The Discreet Charm of the Bourgeoisie. He's behind this script, and along with Schnabel and Luis Kugelberg, and that was Kugelberg's first screenplay credit.
Be interested to see the story about how she got involved in this project, this being her first one and all.
Yeah, it's cool. A couple first-time screenwriters this year. Michael, At Eternity's Gate also stars Ex Machina and Star Wars Episodes 7 through 9's Oscar Isaac as Gauguin.
Sure does.
Homeland and the Young Victoria's Rupert Friend is Vincent's brother Theo Van Gogh. Hannibal and Doctor Strange's Mads Mikkelsen is in here. Frantic and the Ninth Gate's Emmanuel Seigneur. And Matthew Amalric, also from The Diving Bell and The Butterfly, and in this movie.
Yeah, so Schnabel went with some old names that he knows and has worked with before. And there's a great cast in this.
Sure.
There's some decent performances.
Just Mike moaning and groaning in between.
I'm sorry. I know, we're film appreciation. I really hate being so down on this.
We love to love movies. And for the I meant to say this earlier. I think we're... our percentage for liking the movies that we review is pretty high.
Got to be in the 90s.
It's got to be in the 90s. So this is one of those.
Yeah.
Anyway, announced in May of 2017. Here's a quote from Julian Schnabel that fits the beginning of our review and sets the tone, I think. This is a film about painting and a painter and their relationship to infinity, Michael.
Thank God this film finally got made.
It is told.
Just a huge audience just nipping at clasping, hoping that this film would see the light of day one day.
Schnabel continues through the rabble. It is told by a painter. It contains what I felt were essential moments in his life. This is not the official history. It's my version, says Schnabel. One that I hope could make you closer to him.
Okay. I mean, good intentions. Mm-hmm. He's got the right idea. He wants to kind of shine a light on maybe a lesser known, very famous person in history that we don't have a lot of knowledge about firsthand, at least not commonly. So, okay.
The surviving members of the band Queen also made the same comment, but the last word of that sentence was me.
Yes.
He's closer to me.
This movie is about Brian May. Yeah.
At Eternity's Gate was shot in France beginning in September of 2017 and only for 38 days. Most of those were Willem Dafoe.
It's like 36 and a half too long.
Running through a farm.
Yeah.
Wikipedia is crushing it for some quotes here because I like the quote from Dafoe as well. He adds, "You're not illustrating what you think Van Gogh is. You're communing with his memory and what he's left behind. It all comes together in a swirl of color, a swirl of light. It's not naturalistic representation, but it captures the spirit. Van Gogh thought art was a language. Art was a way of seeing. Art was a way of waking up."
I'm trying so hard to give everyone the benefit of the doubt in this movie, but if that isn't the most pompous, arrogant Hollywood answer...
He's trying, though.
I love Willem Dafoe. Great talent. And he's got a decent performance here. Should it be nominated, we'll get into it. But
he's
that
using,
is the, I mean, that's like talking about corporate synergy during a budget meeting, you know?
A swirl of color
in
his description of the character.
Right.
Anyway, Mike, you got some specs?
Unfortunately, At Eternity's Gate, like Mike told you, written by Jean-Claude Carrière, Luis Kugelberg, and Julian Schnabel. They all get written by credits. Schnabel, also the director, credited on this film. And so,
is that his real name?
It's a great fake one, if not.
Or is it Nobel?
Best known, like Mike told you, for the Oscar-nominated turn directing the 2007 film The Diving Bell and The Butterfly. Kugelberg, like Mike also said, we didn't compare notes, and he hit a lot of these, so you can tell where this is going. This would be her first film she's worked on, according to IMDb. But Carrière, not only is he previously Oscar-nominated, but he's got 146 writing credits on his CV, so...
Yeah.
He's seasoned.
Prolific.
September 3rd, 2018 at the Venice Film Festival is when this film debuted. It came out in the U.S. November 16th, a day which will live in infamy. 110-minute runtime on a PG-13 rating. John Killick is the lone listed producer. Tatiana Lizovskaya, I'm sorry if I mispronounced that, I'm sure I did, gets the music by credit and is now my mortal enemy because I have some bad things to say about the score in this. Kugelberg and Schnabel get the edited by credit. Iconoclast and Riverstone Pictures are the production companies. CBS Film gets the distribution rights here stateside. Domestically, the film has only made $2.2 million, and there's no production budget that I could find, and even when it did open, it averaged a relatively modest $23,000 plus on the four screens it was shown on for its specialty opening weekend. Critics like this movie. Audiences, like I already said, I guess at least haven't seen it that much.
No, they really haven't.
7.1 IMDb score on only 3,300-plus reviews, 80% certified fresh Rotten Tomato score, and 116 critical reviews, 93 positive, but even so, 116 is still very low for a 2018 picture.
Most movies are around 280, 300.
Yeah. Average critical score is a 7.3 out of 10. And then there's the audience score, 51% audience score on less than 600 reviews. No casual viewers seeing this, and when they do, they are not taking a liking to it. Average audience score is a 3.3 out of 5. Does carry a 78 Meta rating on only 32 reviews. Again, usually Metascore we get about 50 or so critical reviews. This one only has 32. Only 6 of those scored a 60 or lower. None of them went lower than a 50, so that's very respectable and pretty high marks amongst the critics again.
Mm-hmm.
Awards profile here. Dafoe received his third Oscar nomination last year for The Florida Project and landed his fourth this year for this film. It also substantiates the movie's lone Oscar nom overall and has been the case for all precursor season. The 18 times this film has been nominated for awards amongst critics circles and other precursor shows and awards, all but two of them have been because of Dafoe's acting. He also, like Mike said, was a Golden Globe nominee and had won the Volpe Cup for Best Actor at the Venice Film Festival.
Plot premise reads, a look at the life of painter Vincent van Gogh during the time he lived in Arles, and Auxerre, France.
It reminds me of that episode of Friends. I'm sorry, too, for this analogy, where Chandler is talking about taking Monica on a vacation down the river.
Thank you for the Chandler joke. Welcome. I will have the Friends theme in my head the rest of the episode.
If they played that over this movie, better score.
Better
score. I'm sorry.
Probably agreed. Expectations teaser review here. Mike, I didn't expect to like this movie, and I avoided it for a while, like you did.
Yeah, we kind of held off on this. I'll be honest. I was not happy to see Willem Dafoe have his name called during nominations because I had no desire to see this movie. I know we reviewed it a couple times in our monthly preview.
Didn't like the trailers.
No, we didn't like the trailers. We had issues with them. It seemed like the very, like you said, the artsy, higher class, smartest person in the room type film in the trailers, and that's pretty much what they tried to do as well.
With some heinously on-the-nose dialogue in trailers. In the trailers that was obviously in the movie.
Yeah.
Last year's Loving Vincent, that was nominated for Best Animated Feature, visually dazzling. Story-wise, I got very bored, and the visuals were the only thing that saved that movie.
Yeah, is it possible that a guy who went crazy and was an artistic genius went crazy enough to chop his own ear off, maybe objectively was just a boring person?
He's not going to be very cinematic in this regard, so... Yeah, I'm not a huge fan of this movie as a teaser review either, but it's worth breaking down. There's some, you know, sometimes you can learn more from a bad movie than a great one at times.
Yeah,
so
this
maybe
is Mike being really politically correct. We have to do this.
We have to do this. We're done. We've done all the other nominations, all the big ones. All right, so for some production values, Michael, sight to sound, I would say a lot of tricks in the cinematography, the signature style from Schnabel, even though the cinematographer Benoit Delhomme, he hasn't worked with Schnabel before that I could tell, but you have the close-ups.
A lot of close-ups of
the actors who are talking to Dafoe, basically a low-angle look, and it almost feels as like an adult is hovering over the gaze of a child and talking
That's
down at you. Obviously, it was a big trick for Diving Bell, because that's about a man who's stuck in his own head. He can only blink to speak, and he's paralyzed entirely. And in this film, I was not expecting to get a lot of that, but we get a lot of that again.
The setting was very beautiful. A lot of nature, a lot of lush settings there. Very green and pretty. And you got the Defoe, Van Gogh, Defoe, however you want to call him, mm-hmm. looking up at the trees and looking at the sunlight. And they did do a lot of interesting tricks as far as setting the nature theme.
France is gorgeous. We got a lot of really stunning. Nice shots.
A lot of close-ups, a lot of handheld camera, shaky cam stuff going on at times, running yeah. through. And I think they wanted you to really get into the Van Gogh POV at a lot of points. I don't think they knew exactly where they wanted to stick you for the most part as far as the audience conduit. It seems to jump from first-person POV to a third-person POV back to a first-person without a whole lot of delineation as to why, I would say.
Somewhat true. I'm curious because they're heavy. Some of these devices are heavy-handed. Like as he's descending into madness, there's almost a bifocal camera lens where the top half is
yes,
clear.
Yes, I noticed that as well. Yeah.
The bottom half is very unfocused and unclear. And while he is like replaying scenes from his life previously, this is happening. While he's in the mental hospital, this is happening. It is distracting and is very showy. And I'm surprised we got a lot of that in the middle of this movie. It was very strange.
Yeah, that's a good point. I actually, listen, for me, the screener I saw, the sound was so off that yeah. I couldn't tell if I just got a bad version or if that bifocal lens like you talked about was intentional or just a result of the bad screener I got.
It was intentional.
Yeah, there was a lot of stuff that just struck me wrong here.
The sound being off, I mean, there's stuff that gets repetitive with the sound, but I don't know if that was just your screener. But the editing, Michael, we have, like we said, beautiful shots of nature mixed in with a guy going mad, and that is a strange juxtaposition. It's also, you know, we have signature shots of him just like staring at his feet running or walking through the whatever, the wheat, the barley, whatever's they're growing out there, the wine grapes.
And really disconcerting shots of like when he's coming up on the woman in the middle of the field, we have his POV staggering up to her, just weird decisions.
To me, you get some of that. All right, fine. You want a Spike Lee shot in there that lasts for maybe 10 seconds. In this film, we get a montage. There is at least like 14 minutes of montage in this film.
Oh, yeah.
And there's one long one that's like 7-8 minutes. Yeah. And I was shocked that it was that long. It's very cinematic, and it's interesting to where it builds, but I'm not a fan of it. It's actually a boring montage. I don't know if I've ever seen a boring montage before. Typically, montages liven the pace up, and this montage, I'm just like...
I think it's funny, too, that you had such issues with the sight production values, and my biggest issues are with the sound production values, so we're really just hating this on all angles.
Yeah, coming at it from multiple angles. Michael, last year, they actually used paintings to create Loving Vincent, that best animated feature nominee.
Yeah, it was really, really cool.
And basically, all of the visuals we've seen in this movie look exactly like that previous movie, which was nice. So I think they went to the nines to go on location to where this village was, or a village that looks exactly like it. It looks like the history, as far as we know, and at least from that film last year, it looks like the paintings. And I think they went to great lengths to match up the production design and the sets. And obviously,
yeah, I have no qualms. I think the production designs might be the best part of this movie, aside from like one or two scenes. But I have no qualms whatsoever with how the movie looked. As far as the setting,
and the costumes, they actually give Van Gogh haircuts that match some of his self-portraits at certain points of the film, which I thought was really cool. So, I mean, I think the costumes, the costume design, like I said, production design, I thought that was very strong. But you have a issue with this score,
This score was bad, man. It was, I mean, it sounded like it was ripped right from a 1984 after school special that was like warning kids about the dangers of caffeine. Like, it was, it was bad. And it did so much harm than good, too, because, okay, we have these loud, invasive notes of this score that's almost reverberating against, like, it's like if I was talking like this, you know, to the microphone, that reverberation you just heard. And then there's times where there's no background that the score lays out completely, except you could just hear the background noise so loudly.
Yes.
Whether it's conversations on the screen or conversations in the bar, during a water torture scene during in the mental hospital, I couldn't even understand what the guy with the tattoos on his face was saying. I mean, right. Because the sound, the audio was just weird to me. I don't know if that was intentional or what.
It was weird. There's also a guy next to him kind of babbling throughout that scene, which was very aggravating. And, you know, it's scary. I think the fact that Schnabel, you know, showed the descent into madness is admirable, right? But it's also something that's not going to play that well cinematically. Like, we've talked about this before with just characters screaming for whatever reason. Screaming, crying, whatever. If you have that, that's going to really play on the emotions of your audience. Mm. It's really going to, you know, play on their nerves. You got to pick your spots when you do that. So if in this movie...
And he goes to it over and over again.
It's just unsettling. Yeah. And he's purposely being unsettling for much of the film. And that does have an effect on us, especially if the rest of the novel, the storyline doesn't work really. Performances, though, let's please get out of there into something a little better. You know, is this an Oscar-worthy performance, I would wonder?
No. I would answer that no, and I think this is where the lifetime achievement argument comes into play. Yes, you'd like to see Willem Dafoe nominated. You could say maybe it's the Meryl Streep from The Post last year. We needed a fifth. It's a fine enough performance.
Now, to me, there's a lot of range here, and I'm still debating it myself, to be honest with you. I don't have an answer for you. I don't have an answer for the question. It's interesting that you just say definitely no on eye test, no way.
No, not for me, but yeah.
That's fascinating because I saw a lot of range. You know, he's really acting up a storm in certain scenes. He's fighting with kids. He's having monologues, soliloquies almost. I mean, there's a lot of restraint here as well. Like, you would figure, like, for all the tricks of the trade Schnabel's using to unsettle us, Dafoe is not really doing that. He's really holding back. He's restrained. He's trying to hide his neurosis behind a bunch of defense mechanisms. He's feigning toughness and definitiveness when he's talking to Gauguin, when he's talking to his brother. Most of those defense mechanisms are down, and he's actually, you know, a different person. So many times he's choosing to be very subtle, and I'm into that decision making by this actor, Michael. But at the same time, you know, I'm wondering how this characterization matches up with the history. I'm wondering how this characterization matches up with the rest of the story, because it doesn't work as a composition.
If you're going to reward an actor with the fifth nomination slot of Best Actor, and you're going to reward it on a performance where he chooses to have restraint and chooses to be subtle, I mean, is there anything Dafoe did in this movie better than what Gosling did in First Man, for example? It's the same type of performance, and Gosling, to me, was just much stronger. I don't know if that's helped out by the composition of the script or the way it's shot, but...
I would totally agree.
Yeah, that's where it falls for me, is that I think there's clearly a couple performances that weren't nominated. Yes, Dafoe did great with what he did, but he's... For me, I think especially, he was hurt by the ancillaries of the technical aspects of this film.
Stephon James and If Beale Street Could Talk is another one. Sure. This is very obviously better to me, but based on the eye test. Now, Dafoe is pulling some things off in this movie. He's doing a lot. And there's a couple scenes that stick out to me that we'll go over later where I think he is excellent. And it's an odyssey for this character, so he's going through a lot as well. Oscar Isaac, these are... some of the worst scenes in the film. And it's not necessarily his fault because the dialogue is so bad.
Yeah. The dialogue overall, there's some scenes that they want you to just interpret what's going on in the guy's head. And it is the nuanced stuff that we see from Dafoe's face. And you were supposed. And then when you get these scenes of dialogue where it's like just a straight jab right to your nose.
When people talk shop, they typically get very specific. And yet, when these two artists talk shop, which is the only thing they talk, they discuss like art theory so succinctly that it drives me insane.
Yeah.
And I'm just so disgusted with it because I'm just tired of this convention. I understand it has to be there in the screenplay to move the plot along and to establish the theme, to establish the conflict that as an artist he must overcome.
And you have to do your best to make it relatable to lay people.
And we have 1 3-minute scene in which to do it. So outside of that initial artist meeting, you know, we have these two just like going back and forth about their whole life in an exchange of like 4 lines of dialogue. And it's aggravating because nobody speaks like that ever. Never mind, you know, and art theory people don't speak like that.
Yeah, there was that scene. That dialogue was bad. The Mads Mikkelsen conversation is absurd to me.
It's bad.
Which we'll get to in the spoiler section. But there was, I couldn't, there's always a problem when you can tell the director and the screenwriter think the movie is doing one thing and think it's like relaying this importance and it just falls short.
Right.
It really hurts a movie when that happens.
That being said, I did recognize some, you know, decisions Isaac's making to be restrained, but also he's putting forth a lot of self-assurance, but just the fact that he's questioning Van Gogh so much shows you that he's trying to figure out what his secret is, because he admires him and he admires what he's doing on the canvas.
I mean, that goes back to what I said. This cast is, you have Oscar Isaac, who's a professional of professionals, Mads Mikkelsen, professional of professionals. Like, you have the talent here to pull off something great.
Rupert Friend and Mads Mikkelsen, I thought they did a better job in terms of their performances, but yeah, they're in some bad scenes. As for the women, Michael, the In Session Film podcast, they made a great point all the way back in their review, which I was happy to listen to before this one, that this is a film and this is a story, and Van Gogh was a person who did not understand women at all. And this is a film that doesn't understand women at all. And it's very sad that all, like, the threat, it's a motif throughout the film from the shepherd girl.
Yeah, well, offering to pay, you know, one of the first women you meet is offering to pay to stay the night with you. I would understand, yeah.
To the Emmanuel Signier character, Lolita Shema is the girl on the road from those scenes that I just mentioned. There's also the prostitute girl. Now, something big with the history, and this is not a spoiler in this movie, it's big in the history is that he went mad because he had syphilis. I've heard this from, and I've in a cursory research, I've read this. Van Gogh went mad because of syphilis.
The old Al Capone thing.
And so did his brother died or went mad because of syphilis. And they both did. They were both whoring around. And
well,
that's an undercurrent, I think.
Extrapolate
it works.
That out. Maybe if he was that poor with women overall, maybe he did have to pay. He was with certain women of the night, and that's, you know.
So maybe Schnabel's. Yeah, Schnabel's not going into that. Maybe he couldn't confirm it with all his research. Yeah. And basically, he's saying, as an undercurrent of this film, we're gonna describe Van Gogh's inability to deal with women rather than to get into like the nitty-gritty of it. Script thoughts. This is a strange, artsy-fartsy script, Michael. Yeah. What was more aggravating to you? The endless montage, or when we finally get things slowing down for a scene, it's like having to watch two agoraphobic art history majors having their first conversation ever.
Yeah, the dialogue, and there's some spots, like we said, the dialogue is unforgivably bad.
Like, if we were stranded on the North Pole for a year, and we came out and we had one conversation, and we were told, you get one conversation, we would talk big picture.
Yeah,
probably. Probably big picture in that case. This is what that is.
Yeah, no.
Is.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
I'll tell you another thing, too, and I was trying to save it for spoilers, but it's just, it's so pervasive to my review, is that this movie gets it right, like, in one scene towards the end, where the technical aspects all come together and the pacing finally hits its stride, what it's supposed to, and that makes it infinitely more aggravating.
Frustrating.
To me, because why can't you just do that for the whole film? You know, and it's technical, especially the technical, the score, some of the cinematography falls flat. The pacing is unbearable at times.
Yeah.
And it's like you have it within you where it does come together. You have that capability. Just do that.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, and he failed. I put the blame not so much on Dafoe and his acting, because I think it's a fine performance throughout. I put the blame more so on the cinematography and the, not even the editing, but the script itself.
The script and the direction. Now, Schnabel's made a bunch of really good movies. He's been Oscar nominated for a reason. He's very ambitious with this film. And I think, you know, you can applaud ambition. I think it's worth studying ambition. And I'm glad, in a way, we got to study this. I did watch it a couple times because we did get a DVD of it. And bottom line is, you know, it's a worthwhile study, but kind of a snooze. Yeah. An artful snooze, but a snooze. Yeah. If you watch everything and you love Van Gogh and you love Willem Dafoe, maybe yes, you watch this. Otherwise, it's not necessary. It's not a watch for me.
Yeah, if you're an art history major or if you're an Oscars junkie and you need to see everything nominated, like you are stupid enough to start an Oscars podcast and commit yourself to watching every nominated movie from the big categories.
This has made you rethink a lot of things, haven't you?
We're pivoting into wrestling from now on. You don't have to watch this. Not for me. But hey, let's dance. Let's pick it up a little bit. Maybe we can talk about spoilers. Spoilers ahead!
This is a spoiler warning.
Spoilers. 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 Spoilers.
Mike, Mike, and Oscar! Oscar Sprint, spoilers!
This is the spoiler section for At Eternity's Gate, brought to you by Mike, Mike, and Oscar, and the Oscar Sprint profile of that movie. If you have not seen the movie yet, if you don't want to hear what happens, if you don't want to hear the twists and turns, this isn't where you want to be. Go back, listen to the first 30 minutes or so of this podcast. Go check out the movie for yourself. Don't check out this movie! And then you can hit pause. We'll be here when you hit play to come back. If you've seen the movie already, what's wrong with you? Or if we just hyped it up so much in the precursor, I'm going to beat that word to death, in the first half of this review, if we hyped it up so much that you can't possibly go another second without hearing what happens, this is where you want to be. It's all spoilers all the time at Eternity's Gate, the Oscar Sprint profile, brought to you by Mike, Mike, and Oscar. Mike, get us started.
We may get in a carryover listenership on this one. They might just trust us by now, and we hope, and they'll take our word for it, and then they'll just keep listening to hear us wax poetic about the nonsense of
just
this.
Just abandon ship.
All right, so we'll start. Mike, you hated this movie.
I did not like it.
Can you please articulate the look on your face? You need to make this radio. You need to adapt the look on your face while Willem Dafoe was sprinkling dirt on his face.
It was like a amalgamation.
You're doing really bad so far.
It was an amalgamation of if like my 2-year-old niece just shit in her own hand and presented it to me.
Vivid description from Mike.
Like,
Lund.
What are you doing? What did I do to deserve this? How do I get out of this?
I figured that moment was the one that just would have thrown you over the ledge. Like, you would have been thinking about this movie. Oh, I'm not really good so far. Yeah. It's aggravating. But here's the point where I text also Mike to say, tell him how much this movie sucks. At that moment. Because it happened like maybe 45 minutes into the movie. And he's just like throwing dirt on his face, laughing like a buffoon, smiling out of joy after just the whole 9-minute montage of him in the woods.
It was, for me, like one of the conversation between the Oscar Isaac character and Dafoe. It was like, what am I watching this for? Who would watch this? Who would choose to do this?
We're getting in worse scenes right now. Those are the worst scenes of maybe any Oscar-nominated film this year. It is just unforgivably on the nose to talk about painting in one clear gesture.
I'll throw the Mads Mikkelsen conversation in there too. Because we have, I don't mean to cut you off, but
it's all right.
There's so much subtext, that there's so much interpretation and so much restraint. The pacing is so slow. You're supposed to interpret all these things. And then, oh, by the way, do you know you have basically the same line of thinking as Jesus Christ?
So now we have a religious mental health facility that is practicing dubious things.
Yes. Waterboarding.
They're not known for their understanding.
Nope.
Those old school mental health facilities. So we have a priest who's in charge of this. This priest is Hannibal Lecter. This priest
is a better movie that would have been.
Speaking to, you know, Vincent van Gogh, who cut off his ear.
Yes.
And he's facing the cut off ear. Mm-hmm. And, of course, Vincent van Gogh is having that final conversation before he's going to clear him for departure. And van Gogh compares his own life to Jesus Christ in that scene.
Like, the absurdity of that being on the nose aside, wouldn't the deity comparison be left to critical interpretation 9 times out of 10 in most movies? Because if you're not going to turn off your audience enough by having this painfully boring movie to begin with,
right,
you're going to isolate and polarize the remaining viewers that you have by implementing the religious analogy?
It's strange because Defoe's trying to relate to him there and say, like, well, everyone we follow, I'm also like him, right?
Yeah.
But isn't that like the most sacrilegious thing you can say to a priest?
That's another great part, yeah. And then the priest takes it in stride. And it's like, yeah, you're good to go.
You're good to go. Your brother paid me off or something. What happened there that got him out? I don't understand it. The whole sequence in the mental hospital is excruciating. I think it's meant to be. But
yeah, but there's a difference between it be like in knowing it's excruciating and knowing it's meant to be and this is purposely done this way,
right,
and it actually causing pain to your audience.
That's true. But there is a payoff. I'll get to it in best scene. But Michael, all of the crap with Oscar Isaac.
Bad.
It's so bad. And it builds up to us recontextualizing. At least I didn't know this about the history. Recontextualizing why he cuts off his ear. He didn't cut off his ear and hand it to a woman because he was pining for this woman. He cut off his ear because his best friend left. And in this movie, he tells the woman to get it to Gauguin. Now, why is Gauguin his best friend? Because he spent like 7 minutes of screen time with him talking about the uppermost art theory? Yeah,
I wondered if they were leaning into like the ambiguous sexuality of the man there.
Maybe, but it makes no sense to me. Like, Gauguin doesn't do anything for Vincent.
No,
nothing.
Yeah.
The one small gesture is when Vincent takes his hat and then gives him his hat back. That's hilarious. They're so chummy. Michael, what the hell's going on? It's the worst montage ever. There's actually there's two really good scenes in this movie, and I'm going to get to them, and it totally disqualifies those two scenes. The fact that their friendship isn't built up enough, and I'm going to get there in a second. You have any more worse, though? All of it.
Yeah. Again, the most, and I said it in the non-spoiler section, but I guess I really liked that the scene where the movie starts, where we see the first person POV and Vincent's approaching the woman on the road with all the sheep.
By the way, I want 10 parodies of that on YouTube now, of that scene, but also the voiceover narration at the beginning.
Right.
I would like somebody to hand me tobacco.
God, yeah.
I would like someone to meet
That's
somebody
what I knew.
To massage
I
my
knew
back.
I was in for it.
It goes on
like,
for
right
2
away.
Minutes and 30 seconds. I would like general human conflict and...
My nose
reciprocation.
Is touching my colon.
Yeah. What is he doing?
Like, I actually like that scene. I have that as one of my best because I felt like everything came together in that scene when it actually plays out. Not at the very beginning,
sure,
but when we
sure.
watch it play out.
It's not bad.
And for me, it was just like, if you have this capability where the score is finally playing into the pacing and we finally see this man leaning into, because all movie long, he's toying with us. He's basically teasing us that, like, I'm just going to go insane. I choose to be insane. And he finally is embracing it here. Mm-hmm. And then he walks it back afterwards again. It really weird. But that was the worst of the worst for me, in that you have this capability, you know, and you have to know because it's one of the crescendos of the film that it's all coming together here. Right. You're capable of pulling that off and you just don't. You're sniffing your own fart for the other 2 hours.
Sniffing and smelling every detail. Michael, the whole thing about not understanding women, to me that enters into some of the better scenes as well. But I must say, again, what disqualifies all of it, Gauguin's supposed to be his best bud.
Yeah.
And Gauguin steals the one girl who actually has a conversation with him the entire film, who he clearly likes in a nice scene where they're going back and forth about Shakespeare. And it's actually a scene with some subtext and revealing a lot about their characters. And then Defoe is about to ask her to pose for him, and she's waiting for it. And then the camera, in a brilliant stroke, like, I love this so much, pans quickly to the bearded guy, who is a famous portrait, by the way, from the Loving Vincent movie that I knew was played by, what's his name? Chris O'Dowd. played by Chris O'Dowd in the Loving Vincent movie, the bearded guy. He's like, oh, why, thank you. You want to paint me too? I thought that was funny. I thought that was very sad. I thought he was going to work up the gumption to ask her out, essentially.
That's what's
there.
What's fucking annoying about this whole thing, you're right, is that it does do some things well.
And he totally chickens out in that scene. It's just brutal. And Emmanuel Seigneur, she's always beautiful. She's beautiful all the way back from the Ninth Gate to the Diving Bell and the Butterfly, even to today.
I would watch that scene from the Ninth Gate on repeat rather than watching this movie again.
So, Michael, that's a good scene, like an objectively good scene.
Look, it's not like it's 2 hours of shit, right? But I think that's almost worse in that there are moments of brilliance. When Van Gogh is shot at the end of the movie with two vandals come out.
I like that.
And I thought it was beautifully done.
Now that's
you go from the first person POV to the third person watching him stumbling around to that far shot up the hill where he's wandering down the mountainside.
Smart.
And then he's in the open casket. That's beautiful.
And economical.
Yeah.
Extremely economical, and like three or four quick glimpses of what happened. That is a highly contested historical fact that Van Gogh
They even said that at the end, yeah.
Did he shoot himself or did kids rob him?
You don't see him get shot, to be fair.
Correct.
You see the kid with the gun and you hear a gunshot and then they show him wobbling around. I also want to say, by the way, that I think that's Defoe at his best in that scene.
He's had a few misunderstandings with the common folk throughout this film, so it could have gone any which way, I'm sure. I like the end of the montage. That was really long and boring, though, because it's finally Van Gogh. I got half of a goosebump.
Okay. You got a goose.
I got a goose.
Uh-huh.
I got goose there because he's about to paint at night. And his most famous painting is Starry, Starry Night. You wonder if he's going to paint Starry, Starry Night at the end of that. If he's not, then why did we just have 8 minutes building up
to it?
It's
like finally seeing Thanos on screen.
Frolicking in the grass for 8 minutes. And then, of course, he's got to paint Starry, Starry Night, right?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. But bottom line is that was interesting. The one other scene I really, really liked, that was objectively good. You know, you go through hell in this movie. I mean, the character goes through hell. You go through hell as an audience member. It is a rough watch. It is a tough watch. We finally get a positive review from the art historians who are all reading it in one room, apparently. That's
and it would have had so much more impact if they didn't just spell out the fucking Jesus analogy scene before.
I liked it in the sense that dramatic irony to the nines, because they're looking at his paintings. They're talking about his art. The brother Theo, the sister-in-law, they're reading the review in a cozy, you know, room by the fire. And then you have Vincent Van Gogh in a straitjacket with the self-portrait buzz cut. And I was like, wow, that's a big moment of dramatic irony there. He was setting that up for a while.
That was funny. I thought all the oomph was taken out of it by, like, you know, Jesus died and he wasn't discovered to be great until 30 years after his death. I guess my art's good now because I'm in a straitjacket. Like, okay. We can't let us figure that out for ourselves.
You know how I know there's not enough plot in this movie, though, Mike? I was able to summarize the plot in one paragraph, and I don't need to read it now, but you know how bad I am at synopses.
Yeah.
I am bad at them, and one paragraph I was able to sum it up. It's basically Vincent Van Gogh meets Gauguin. Vincent Van Gogh goes south, goes mad, dies.
Decides to go mad and then kicks it. Man, I couldn't understand that guy with the tattoos on his face in the insane asylum. And I just, that was like an hour and change into the movie. I just couldn't find it within me to even rewind and try to rewatch it. I just didn't
care. He's talking about being a soldier and how nobody understands soldiers, I think. And
maybe don't get the tattoos on your face.
Then. Yeah. Yeah, of like... instruments of war.
Undercut your credibility a little
bit. Yeah, a little bit. They're like face tattoos of swords. And that's an issue with common folk. But this story was boring in Loving Vincent with superior visuals.
That's what I said at the top, man. So, maybe, there's a chance, I don't know, I'm not a Van Gogh historian. There's a chance that maybe he just didn't live that crazy a life and he just happened to go mad.
I will say, another best for me, every time we saw a Van Gogh painting, I wanted to, like, there was a couple that I was like, whoa.
Yeah.
I never seen that one before.
The artwork is stunning in this. I think that's part of the production design.
Yeah, it's really his paintings. Yeah. I mean, there's obviously they got copies of them or whatever, but it's amazing. Like, the Roots one, I'm like, holy shit. The one with all the hay, he's like, I just paint sunlight, and then they show that painting. I was like, holy shit. Obviously, Starry, Starry Night, something I've always, like, gazed at for long periods of time. I remember having an art class, and, like, we would move on from that painting in the class, mm-hmm. and I would just, like, keep my page open to that painting because I wanted to keep looking at that painting.
It is stunning. And there's other stuff that this hits on, too. Not that it's necessarily a best, but, like, there's the conversation he has with the old man about why do you paint. The whole philosophical, I mean, I would think if you're a biographer of the man's life, you can get into that.
I like the stuff with the psychologist that wasn't Mads Mikkelsen. Like, the one with the beard who was kind of sincerely trying to understand why you cut off your ear to tell your friend not to leave you. Because he's like, I sincerely don't get this.
Well, if you try to back out of this podcast, you know what's coming next for me.
You're a brilliant artist. Why would you do this?
All right. Well, let's wrap this up.
Please.
Final grades, Mike.
It's a C+ for me.
You're being very generous.
It's a rough watch.
Yeah.
But we have a 3-point curve, and I'm surprised we, like, without going over this really together, we landed on the same grade.
I'm a C. I'm like a 74, 75, hard C all day. It's a movie. You can see good performances. I don't think there's a whole lot of positive to take away unless, of, like we said in the non-spoiler section, you are that art history major, you're just in love with the subject matter, then go for it. But otherwise, it's rough. It's rough for a casual viewer to get through.
It's true.
And I mean, it sounded like you didn't have all that many highlights to take away either, as far as
we did our best. I mean, we tried to recognize what was objectively strong, and Schnabel's a hell of a filmmaker. I mean, there's no debating his resume.
No, yeah.
So,
this movie was bad.
Sad that it wasn't great. But this is not just sad that it wasn't great. Like, this is just didn't work. It didn't work.
It shouldn't be nominated. I'm sorry. No. All right. Well, let us know. Are we wrong about this? Are you a big Vincent Van Gogh fan? Do you think we're way off the mark? You can hit us up. Want to hear your thoughts about this. If you saw this movie, especially, let us know.
Please.
I would just like to know who actually watched this. But you can reach out to us, Mike, and Oscar on Facebook, Mike, and Oscar on Instagram, MM and Oscar on Twitter, Mike, and Oscar at gmail.com, and on Reddit. We are available everywhere you hear podcasts. Tune in, iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, Spotify, etc., etc. Michael, Vincent Van Gogh sacrificed his ear for his best friend. What are you going to give me?
This final word of wisdom that's not really all that wise, but Vincent Van Gogh, really awesome painter.
Mm-hmm.
Good at his job. Not a great compelling subject for a feature film. This is two feature films now, and they're not good.
Doesn't seem to be. Maybe put him in the MCU. Spice him up a little bit.
Yeah, but he needs a bit part. He can't have a...
Right. No. Yeah. He could be...
Van Gogh, man. I suck.
Marvel, hire this man. All right, guys. Reality sucks. This movie may have two. But keep watching other ones with us, and we will check you out next time.
See ya.